Hello and welcome to Future Projection. This is episode 201. It's another mailbag episode. I'm Carlos Collazo, joined by Ben Badler. How you doing, Ben?
I'm great, Carlos. How you doing?
I am good and ready to get into some of the questions you guys have sent us. Appreciate all the questions we've gotten. The ones today I'm particularly excited to get into. But if you guys do have questions for us at any point, we tend to put out calls for questions in the lead up to recording these episodes. But if you want to send us an email, send us a message, please do. You can email us at futureprojection@baseballamerica.com. Always really like hearing from the readers, whether that's just some questions that you maybe don't want us to answer on the show, but just hearing from you guys is always cool. But the mailbag is always open, and we've got some fun ones to get into today. So without further ado, let's hop into it. This is from Ben on Twitter. I don't think it's Badler, but he asks, how much does the underlying data support Caden Bodine's offensive production this season? And as a switch hitter, does he have a stronger side? Has the throwing and receiving developed as expected since being drafted? So this is a fun question. Kind of a well-rounded question on Caden Bodine. I'd say my thoughts on Caden Bodine's profile are pretty similar today as they were pre-draft. I may be even more optimistic about him offensively just because he has gone out and produced at a high level, and to this point his relative lack of power hasn't been too much of an issue. He has still been the contact wizard offensively that we expected him to be coming out of college. I think his miss rate overall is right around 10 or 11%, which is tremendous. His in zone miss rate is even better, at under 4%. I'm less concerned with the lack of power for Caden Bodine offensively. I don't ever think he's going to be the biggest power guy in the world. I don't think he necessarily needs to be. I do wonder more about the swing decisions with him moving forward and how that will impact his profile, Ben. I mean, he's never a guy who's struck out at a significant rate. His strikeout rates have been extremely low so far in 2026. And I think part of that is because he makes a lot of contact, but he also just swings a ton. I think his pro swing rate is north of 50%. His chase rate is close to 30%. So if there are questions I have with him, it is going to be, okay, once he's facing major league pitching, is the aggression in his swing decisions on top of the lack of power, is that going to be problematic? Is that going to prevent him from being the sort of hitter who will profile as an everyday sort of player, or an impactful regular sort of player that I think he has the potential to be? Those are the questions I have. How about you?
I am really excited about what Caden Bodine is doing this year. The contact part of it, we expected that because he was such an elite contact guy coming out of Coastal Carolina, and to see, like you said, the end zone miss rate under 4% is, like, just for context, there's like maybe single digit number of players, at least in the full season leagues, that are better than that. And just obviously the overall strikeout rate, swing and miss rate is really low. He does expand the zone. When he does expand the zone, he's still putting the balls in play. And I think you're actually underselling his power a little bit, because when he was, I had that question about him coming out of college, like, all right, how much extra base damage is there going to be? Like, he had 5 home runs at Coastal his junior year, which actually, like, down from his first 2 years, like the slug was pretty mediocre, I would say. He's got 10 home runs this year between the three levels. It's 352, 421, 518, and now he's in double A. You know, a good chunk of that was in low A. All right, fine. But still, I think this guy is showing more power than I expected him to show. Yeah. Is he going to hit 30 home runs? No, I don't think that. But I see him being like a 10 to 15, maybe 15 to 20 home run type guy in the big leagues. Obviously, catchers aren't going to play as much every day. But I think there's solid enough power there for a catcher. On the swing decision part, yeah, I'd like to see him rein it in a little bit. I think it's similar to what Gabriel Moreno was when he was coming up in the Blue Jays farm system, where he was another guy who just had elite hand-eye coordination, could not get him to swing and miss much in the zone. He would chase a lot of stuff out of the zone. He would still make contact, get himself into trouble by not swinging at the optimal pitches to swing at. But overall, just look at the overall package, like, I think that's going to be a really good offensive profile for a catcher. And then defensively, I mean, he's a really good receiver too.
Yeah, so the question was, has throwing and receiving developed as expected since being drafted? I don't know if you've heard differently, but it sounds like we've mostly heard very positive reviews on him defensively as well. So if you had high expectations for him as a defensive catcher, I don't think there's any reason to come off that. It sounds like the only learning curve for him really has been like figuring out the intricacies of calling a game, because that's maybe a newer element to him, like managing a staff, calling a game. But the physical requirements behind the plate, throwing, receiving, blocking, all that sounds just as good as we expected and hoped it would be pre-draft. I guess the one other element of the question here that we should tackle is he better from either side, the left-handed side or the right-handed side? He's always been slightly better from the left side, which is the side you'd prefer to be better on if you do have a little bit of a split. I know this year in 2026, his OPS as a left-handed batter is .973 compared to a .744 OPS as a righty. I wouldn't get too caught up in single season platoon splits for a hitter, but if you do look back at his 3-year college track record, he's always been slightly better from the left side. He shows a bit more power from the left side than the right side, both like rate power and just overall counting stats. He's going to get more of his power from being left-handed because he'll be facing more righties. But I think like on a rate basis too, he just shows more power as a left-handed hitter, which is typical. And I think the one you would probably prefer to see him better at.
Theo Gillen, Nathan Flewelling, Cooper Fleming, Tayton Gray. Now you throw Grady Emerson into the mix.
Not too shabby of a farm system, huh?
No, they're doing all right.
Them or the Brewers?
I would still have the Brewers ahead of them.
Okay. All right, let's move on to our next question. We've got one from Anashi on Twitter. With the Yankees making a typically unprecedented move for promoting Yastin Peña from the DSL to low A, could he be a potential high riser on prospect lists?
I think he will. He will certainly rise up the Yankees prospect list. Obviously, what he's doing or what he did this year in the DSL is really good for a guy who's 18 years old, first season out.
But yeah, he hit 375, 457, 646, 8 home runs, 11 doubles, 24 walks, 24 strikeouts in the DSL.
Yeah. At the same time, like a good, when he's swinging at strikes, it's really good. He does have big power. I think that's obviously the calling card with him. But also he's a guy who's chasing a lot of stuff outside the zone. And I think that's the area where I'm wondering how that's going to translate once he gets out of the DSL. I think we see guys who are in the DSL who can have a lot of success because they have a lot of bat speed and power. And if they have questionable pitch recognition or strike zone judgment, then okay, they don't see a lot of good breaking balls or change-ups or guys who can command those pitches either at that level. So, okay, doesn't really hurt them as much there. But as you move up, all right, then more holes start to get exposed by the time you get to low A sometimes. So love the power. Obviously, so far, it's been a really good signing for them for, you know, not a super expensive bonus by any means. So good signing so far. He's definitely made a bigger name for himself within the Yankees farm system. But as far as like a, you know, am I expecting him to be on like a top 100 list anytime soon? No, I don't foresee that in the next year or so.
Today's episode is sponsored by the ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program. Kratz, we love our pups.
We do. And I can't put Bella in a bubble. So you know what I'll do? I'll do the next best thing for her.
That's right. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customizable accident and illness plans that can fit your budget, your lifestyle, and even your pet's particular quirks. ASPCA Pet Health Insurance has been around for almost 30 years and has covered over 1 million pets. And when it's time to submit a claim, it's easy. Just use their app and receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account so you can get back to focusing on what really matters, and that's your pet. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/foul. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/foul. Again, one more time, aspcapetinsurance.com/FOUL. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independence American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer and is not engaged in the business of insurance.
Okay, let's move on to our next question, which is from Bogard on Twitter, who just asked Andrew Fisher, question mark. And I think this is a funny one because despite the fact that we have maybe shown the Brewers as much love as you possibly could for a team's farm system, they have what, like 30 of the top 100 players on our top 100 at this point?
It was 37, no?
I don't know what the exact number is, but I think a lot of Brewers fans look down the list and they say, wait, where's Andrew Fisher? He seems to be the guy that they expect to be on the list, are excited about. He has had a very loud offensive season this year in high A and double A, but maybe a kind of a polarizing profile given what he's shown so far. So overall, he has hit 289, 425, 682. He has 33 home runs, which seems crazy to say, in 86 games. He's walking 17.4% of the time. He also has a 32.9% strikeout rate and some maybe real underlying miss questions that are going to potentially hold him back at higher levels.
And also might end up playing first base too.
Correct.
Defensive questions for him.
Yeah, the defensive questions as well. So I guess for you, I know Andrew Fisher has been discussed as a potential top 100 prospect. He's definitely in kind of the conversation to be in that range. Are you more optimistic? Are you more pessimistic about this profile? Where do you stand in like the miss questions that he's shown so far becoming prohibitively scary as he continues to move up the minor league ladder? Or do you think both his swing decisions, on base value, raw power, and just like batted ball quality will be enough for him both to profile at first base and continue tapping into power at the major league level? I could see people having huge ranges of opinions on Fisher. I don't really feel strongly either way, but the miss rate overall is a bit concerning for me. I think we're kind of reaching red flag territory for him. I wish he could make a little bit more contact than what he's showing.
He's got, I mean, you don't need me to tell you this. Guy had 33 home runs. He has big, big left-handed power. And it's not a long swing either. Like, it's not like, oh, he's, it's not like Spencer Jones where, okay, like when you're 6'7", like you're just going to have some length to your swing. But just the way the swing works does lead him susceptible to the swing and miss. What he has going in his favor is he's not just up there hacking at everything either. Like, it's not just an all or nothing slugger. Like, there are some walks in there to offset the strikeouts. There are not guys who strike out at a 33% clip at these levels who go on to major league success. Or at least the list of players who have is really, really small. Obviously, like, strikeouts have gone up over the years, so you kind of have to adjust it based on the context of the era and the environment that you're looking at. But that is a major red flag. So I view him as a guy who is a top 100 prospect. I think he is worthy of being on that list. And I don't know that we really have like a lot of people on staff who even like argue strongly against that. It's more just like kind of like a bubble type candidate. I think he can make enough adjustments for it to work for him potentially, but yeah, the strikeout rate is really, really scary. And so is the fact that, like, I think he might be able to play third base, but my bet is it probably more likely is first base, which puts even higher demands on the offensive output. So, yeah, I mean, every now and then you get like a Ryan Howard type player who can swing and miss at that level in the minor leagues. And his strikeout rate wasn't this high in the minor leagues because just strikeouts when Ryan Howard was coming up in the minor leagues weren't that high. But like relative to his environment, it probably was pretty comparable. So it can work. I would love to see it work, obviously, because he hit some majestic home runs. But yeah, the swing and miss is pretty scary.
The other thing that might help him make this extreme profile work is he is hitting the balls you would want to see a player like him hit. Like, this was the case in college. He really pulled the ball a lot. He got the ball in the air frequently. I looked at just any hitter in the minors this year who has at least 100 at-bats. He's third in air pull rate. He's pulling 61.3% of his batted balls in the air to the pull side. I mean, that is a huge reason why he is showing the sort of in-game power production that he has. And if he's able to maintain that, it's like a pretty extreme sort of ball flight profile, but probably one of the ones you would like to see for a player like him to maximize his power in game while still maintaining those higher swing and miss rates. Because again, I think the walk rate for me is really encouraging, and it's something he's always done at a high level. He's still continuing to do it at a high level. I do think he could potentially be one of these just more extreme three true outcomes sorts of offensive profiles where he has enough power, he walks enough. Yeah, it's a higher strikeout rate than you would like to see for any player, but the other things he does well enough to make it work. Even if he's playing first base, I could see him being a very valuable offensive player. What the overall upside will be with him striking out that much and playing first base only, I'm not exactly sure what that is, but I could see a number of different paths to like regular big leaguer, invaluable, middle of the order sort of masher.
Yeah, I guess the way I put it is I like him, but then you compare him to somebody like Josh Adamczewski in the same organization, right? Where it's okay, corner outfielder has power, but not as much power as Andrew Fisher. They both do have a good idea of the strike zone, but it's just a much more pure swing and better contact skills with Adamczewski, where okay, he doesn't hit the ball nearly as hard as Fisher, but it's a more well-rounded and more complete hitter compared to Andrew Fisher.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, so hopefully the open-ended Andrew Fisher question was answered there. I'm sure there'll be a lot more written about him in the coming weeks and months at baseballamerica.com. So if you have any follow-ups or any specific questions, again, don't hesitate to throw them at us. We've got one more today, Ben. This is from Pawtucket Pat on Twitter, who says, thanks for doing this. A couple questions about the trio of Tyler Bell, Drew Burris, and Derek Curiel, all recent collegiate draftees who are going inside. Did they all get inside of the top 10? I think so, right?
Yeah.
Who has the highest upside? Who has the best career? And who's first to the majors? Do you have any strong thoughts on either of those, Ben? Because I feel like I'm leaning, I got pretty strong leans in all three of these categories. I'm not sure if you do.
First to the majors, probably I would say Burris, just based on what the A's
do. So that was my thought as well. I think Drew Burris, he also feels like the player that's like most fully realized right now. He's more physical than Curiel and Tyler Bell to the extent that that matters. I think maybe Tyler Bell's shoulder health could be a reason to not expect him to move as quickly as far as
I don't think the Rockies are in a position where they're like, we need to get him right in the big leagues this year or next year to contend for the Pirates NL West.
Pirates and A's both seem like they'd be more willing to move someone quicker. The A's have actually done this. All three of them, I think, are pretty polished defensive players that I could see moving quickly. But I would go Burris for first to the majors. How about highest upside? Because for me, I think this is also Drew Burris. And it's mostly because he has more power than Bell and Curiel. And I think he has more power than I would expect Curiel and Bell to get to, even with a few more years of physical development. And that would probably be the key separator for me here for these three.
I could see the case for Burris having the highest upside. I also like
him. I could also see it being
lowest of the three, just overall.
I agree with you. And I think you could also maybe make a case for Tyler Bell as highest upside if you wanted to say he's the only shortstop of this trio. Like maybe there is a defensive bar that Tyler Bell could get to that would make his just overall value greater than the other two. So it would be hard for me to make a case for Derek Curiel in this category. I lean Burris because of the power. I could see a case for Bell in the upside category if you wanted to make it. But I do have some more questions about offensive approach, physicality with Tyler Bell that would maybe prevent him from being my pick
with Curiel
in this area. Yeah. With Bell. No, with Bell.
Oh, with Bell.
I'm saying for me personally, that's why I would lean towards Burris for highest upside. But if you weren't gotcha. As skeptical on his approach, or you were more bullish on the power he'll get to with a wood bat and pro ball, because I could see Tyler Bell just being clearly the best defensive player of this trio. And then for best career, for me, it would be Derek Curiel. Probably not a surprise to listeners of the podcast, but I think even without having the highest upside of this group, I just think that he might be the best pure hitter clearing out above these other two players. I think he's going to be a very steady regular for a long time. And I think even without even maybe having all-star upside, I could see a case where Derek Curiel is just the most valuable of these three, because odds are not all three of them are going to make it and pan out and be regular big leaguers for a long time. And for a long time now, Curiel has been one of my particular favorites. So I think that's not particularly surprising that he would be my pick for that category. But
I would take Curiel for a career. And I think mm-hmm. that the way we talk about upside sometimes is not always in alignment with how it plays out. Because a lot of times when we talk about upside, and like, I mean, there's some truth to it. We talk about guys who have the most, you know, bat speed and power and tools. And okay, if everything comes together for this guy, then what could, you know, he be, right? Like the Giancarlo Stanton thing, right? Where it's okay, coming out of high school, he's raw, but he's a really good athlete, physicality, obviously gigantic power. Okay, it all clicks for him and he's going to hit 500 home runs. So like, okay, we think of it like that and there's truth to that. But a lot of times too, upside comes from guys who do make a lot of contact and have really good swings and really good approaches for a young hitter. And then they get stronger, they fill out, their approach continues to evolve to be able to tap into more power as they get older. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, maybe this guy has more upside than we realize. Right. The tool, like the power gets better. The power comes on later in their career. So I don't know, like with Drew Burris, for example, I don't know what other, maybe he makes some swing adjustments that changes his profile somewhat, but whereas with Derek Curiel, he could get stronger. And there's a question if he will. It's kind of a more narrow frame with him still. Does it ever actually come together? But I do think there's just the pure hitting ability that he has, the way his swing works, the way his approach works is going to be conducive to being a successful big league hitter. And then if more power does come through with him and he's able to stay in center field, especially with the instincts that he has, I actually do think, as much as we talk about him as like a relatively safer type player, I actually think there is considerable upside there too.
Cool. Well, I'm glad I could get you to talk positively about Derek Curiel. I guess I just had to be particular about what other players were thrown into the mix here, and I can get you as a high man on Curiel with me.
You mean Derek Curiel, the member of my future projection preseason draft team? That Derek Curiel?
Oh, wow. I completely forgot that you were able
that
to
Derek
draft
Curiel?
Him. How did that happen? Yeah. I guess you got some sway here in this conversation. Cool. Well, those were all of our questions for today. That's probably going to wrap us. Again, just some housekeeping for the show moving forward. We are going to miss a few weeks. We're going to be on the road traveling, so don't expect the usual podcast on Fridays or Tuesdays for, I believe, the next 2 weeks. And then after that, we should be back to our regularly scheduled programming. So just a heads up for you guys who are looking forward to the show every week. We appreciate you as regular listeners, and we will, again, look forward to getting back into the swing of things as the fall progresses. But we'll wrap today there. For Ben, I am Carlos. So long, everybody.